asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
You know what, buddy? It's Monday, which means we are going to hear directly from some listeners. We've got some questions to answer today, whether or not you should be considering Robinhood for your retirement. That's looking forward to getting to that one.
You and I, it's been a little contentious between the two of us on this topic, too.
Yeah, so. we might come down on different sides of the fence by by the end of that discussion.
You might hear Matt and Joel at each other's throats today.
As they duke it out. Another listener, she is wondering, like, they might be in a situation, I guess, where the new save plan, it may not actually be right for them. We're going to dive into those details. And then another listener is wondering how to go about finding a cheap car. Is it even possible? We'll get to that. Plus others during today. Episode.
Cheap car sounds like an oxymoron these days, cheap given car. What's happened in the car market, right?
Luckily, we have seen used car prices slowly start to tick down over the past few months.
It's getting better, but it's been real bad.
We're not at the top of a, 18-month climb, essentially, like we saw towards the end of last year. But
things are normalizing, but we'll get to that in a bit. Matt, first off, I have to acknowledge something. I'm a bit of a hypocrite, okay? And you already knew this.
Yeah. Hey, we all have different ways where we kind of fall off the wagon. Is it fall off the wagon or fall off the horse?
Both, maybe. I don't know. Which wagon? It's usually wagon.
Oh, it's wagon, because if it's the horse, well, I guess
that would hurt.
In both cases, you want to get back on.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so
I'm not a gymnast, Maury.
Yeah, I don't always live up to my ideals perfectly, but okay. Here, I've got an explanation for it everyone always does when they don't live up to their ideals. But I used a buy now pay later service for the first time.
Oh,
I know.
Hand over your how to money license, your personal finance card.
People are going to be shocked to hear that I've done this after all the thrashing that we've given to Klarna, Afterpay, all those guys. But I did. I have a reason. I have a reason for using it.
All right, let's hear your justification.
I used Klarna specifically because I was offered a significant discount to do so. So I was shopping on this one website, and they said, "Hey, if you use Klarna to buy the shoes that you're buying or whatever."
Was it shoes?
It was trail running shoes. $50 bucks off your purchase.
Nice. Not to throw you under the bus, you've gotten a few pairs of...
They're all the same. They're all the same shoes, too.
Joel's over here turning into a sneakerhead.
No, I'm not.
There's nothing wrong with that, but...
Trust me, I'm not.
It's like a mix of middle age where you get the same shoe over and over again.
That's exactly what it is.
But you are getting them in different colors, which does feel more like the sneakerhead.
Yeah, it does.
So, like, on one hand...
hand, I know what you're saying.
You're turning into that. And on the other hand, you're just getting older.
I do. I have like four pairs of the same shoe. And when they go on sale, I get it. And this was another example where these shoes, the regularly like $200+ shoes, were on sale for like $50+.
Okay.
And so I was like, great, I'm getting.
But then on top of that, you got another 50?
Another 50 off.
Oh,
I had to buy like two pairs, but then I got the $50 off. And so, but the cool thing is, I didn't realize this, when you opt to pay through Klarna, it's kind of like other payment systems, you can pay all at once still. Mm-hmm. So I did not finance these shoes over time.
There
I paid for them all at once.
Snag the discount. I'm totally fine with that.
Okay.
It's,
all right.
I mean,
I'm sure you
felt a little tense.
Conflicted internally.
Your pits were sweating. I'm yes. sure you're just like, am I allowed to do this?
Right.
Is anybody watching me?
Well, that's why I felt the need to confess in public.
Before you hit purchase. No, it makes me think of credit cards, just generally speaking, right? Because there are benefits that you receive by using the right credit cards, but you only need to use the cards if you have your spending under control and if that doesn't tempt you into, oh, maybe I'll keep that balance. Oh, do I have to? I don't actually have to pay that balance off. Maybe I'll just like kick that can down the road until next month and I'll pay a little bit of interest. You're not going to be tempted to do that. And so...
Right. Well, and that's the thing. That's why I paid for it all in full, just because
way,
I was like, I could spread
it,
these payments out, but I don't want to.
You're using it like a tool.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest problem that we have with them is not the radical interest rates that are attached to them. It's the behavioral side of things that gets people messed up. And we're seeing that more and more when it comes to people using buy now, pay later. They're using it as a means to be able to buy things that they probably can't and shouldn't be buying.
That's right.
But in this case, it was just a score discount.
Well, and look for those discounts as well because, I don't know, might be in that fine print. And if you were already planning to make that purchase, then that's a great way, I think, to snag a discount. But be careful, right? Just like we always say with credit cards, you want to make sure that you're not overdoing it, that you are being careful. And of course, I would expect nothing less than you being the most careful when it comes to using
buy now, pay later.
During this episode, we are going to enjoy... Is this our last beer from Iceland?
I think so,
So this is an Icelandic... We have. By the way, they just throw Icelandic in front of the name of a regular beer.
This is an American
IPA.
This
is an Icelandic Wee Heavy. So Wee Heavy, not surprisingly, this is going to be a Scotch ale that I'm looking forward to enjoying with you.
Can the folks in Iceland, can they do a Scotch ale right? We'll see.
It's got a nice, it's not plaid, tartan.
Oh,
like a nice
yes.
tartan kind of look to the label there. Nice little nod to it being a Scotch ale.
Reminds me of our fantastic trip earlier this year. All right, let's get to the questions, though, Matt, that we've got to get to today on today's episode. And by the way, if you are listening and you're like, I've got a money question that I would love for Matt and Joel to tackle, well, we'd love to hear it. You can go to howtomoney.com/ask to figure out how to record your question and send it our way. It's pretty simple, and we hope to take it on the next Ask HTM episode. But Matt, let's get to this first one. This one is about using Robinhood, which is another service, another company where we haven't always had the nicest things to say. Well, should you use them to open up your retirement accounts?
Hey guys, my name is Kyle and I'm 22 years old from Illinois. I'm a recent college grad with no college debt, and I just started my job in June, and I started my Roth IRA on Robinhood because I already had money in there. I recently started becoming a gold member Robinhood because I get a 3% match on all contributions to my Roth IRA. This would translate to about $195 that I would get for free added to my Roth just from maxing it out, which I plan to do. But it would cost me $72 for the full year, so it would come to about $123 free extra contributions to my Roth for doing it through Robinhood. I'm just wondering if this is really worth it, and I've tried to read up on the fine print, but don't know if I'm missing something and there's more fees down the road that I should switch now before I am in too deep. Big fan of the show. And thank you.
Ooh, I like that, Kyle. He mentioned reading the fine print. We will actually get to some of that fine print, but I want to take it back even further. He mentioned that he's a recent college graduate, but that he has zero college debt, which is amazing. It makes me think of our recent conversation with Jason Brown. how it is, in fact, possible to graduate without any college debt.
That's actually the name loan debt of Jason's book.
Yeah.
It is possible.
It is possible.
Which I love, because so many people think this is the way it has to be. It has to be tons of college debt, tens of thousands of dollars paid off over a decade plus. No, that's not how it has to be. And it's not the way it is for Kyle.
That conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
It takes the right mindset, though. It takes doing the hard work to make it happen. So, Kyle, congrats there. But then on top of that, you're trying to max out that Roth IRA there in your early 20s, which I think it's pretty rare. Honestly, my guess is he probably had someone to teach him a lot about personal finances, maybe as he was growing up. But either way, mad props to you, because you are going to create a lot of different options for yourself in the not so distant future, just by how it is that you're handling your finances already. You are at the beginning of your career, but this is going to open up a lot of different opportunities that other folks aren't going to have, because they're going to be beholden to a specific job because of the paycheck or for whatever various reasons.
I was going to say it's going to open up a can of worms, but like the good kind of can of worms, like one with like the sour gummy worms in them or something like that.
A can of worms, and you're about to go fishing. So this is going to allow you to get more fish.
Right? Yeah. Something like that. But I think you're right, Matt. Like typically when someone's this young handling money so well, there's someone to thank behind that. There was some education that took place, whether it was in the home, whether it was grandparent, mentor, whatever it was. But Kyle, make sure to say thank you if that's the case. If not, you're just incredible all on your own. So well done. But let's talk about where to open up that Roth IRA, Matt. That's the heart of Kyle's question. We often talk about Vanguard, Fidelity, and Schwab. You know, we mentioned
our favorites. Absolutely.
Yeah, we mentioned M1 on the show before as a what we consider a better alternative to Robinhood. And so much of that was because Robinhood didn't have retirement accounts for the longest time. They didn't offer them. The taxable brokerage account was the only way you could start investing. And a lot of people were missing out on the tax advantage retirement accounts because they were going directly to Robinhood.
It's sort of like they're driving down this road and there's like this big massive exit with lots of signs flashing like exit here, like yes. This is where you want to be, but just like a little bit further down there. Actually, it was just the exit on the other side of the road without the flashing lights. Like that was the retirement exit or turn that you should have been making, but instead Robinhood, man, they were going like they had the spotlights out and they were trying to funnel every, especially folks who were younger, their direction in order to invest with them. But these are folks who oftentimes had not yet started investing within an IRA.
Well, and the whole app is built around being flashy, right? And let's be honest, they did a great job. Like it's a really, really functional app, and it almost too functional, right?
But I remember first time I tried it out, and I guess it was either when I opened the account or made my first little purchase, and the confetti flies.
Yeah.
They make you feel so good.
Makes you feel like $1 million, even if you're only investing 100, right? But then, you know, Robinhood, they finally did make available tax advantage retirement accounts, traditional and Roth IRAs. And then they went a step further and they launched the Match, the first one ever of its kind. Nobody else,
which is pretty cool,
before or since has offered anything like that. So we softened our stance a bit. We were kind of anti-Robinhood, and then this came along and we were like, actually, maybe it's time to think about Robinhood at least a little bit. You know, matches are typically only available via an employer-sponsored plan, via that 401k or 403b or something like that, right? Individual retirement accounts, they don't have access to matching dollars. But Robinhood, they kind of added that as a sticky incentive. Mm-hmm. And really, it's not that bad of a value proposition.
No, it is. It sounds like you might be coming around a little bit, Joel. We'll see.
Maybe. But a little.
The devil is in the details. And it is worth knowing what those pesky details are before you fully embark on the Robinhood IRA train. So definitely, if you are listening and you're like, oh man, I didn't know Robinhood had a match, be sure to check out the FAQs. We'll link to those in our show notes, because if you want to keep that unparalleled 3% match, there is a 5-year vesting period. And that's even if you
just get the 1% match.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So like you
which
have
you
to
get
stick
for,
around.
You don't have to pay anything to get the 1% match. But Kyle, like he was talking about Robinhood Gold, paying that fee, the Robinhood Gold fee, that's how you get the 3% match.
That's right. Which, by the way, I think he said $72. So that's a $6 a month fee.
Yep.
But when I was looking, it said $5.
No, I think it was $5.99.
Oh, it was a $5.99.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Well, either way, it's not.
Or maybe it was $4.99. I don't know.
I thought I just saw just like straight up five. Either way, we'll link to that. But in addition to that pretty long vesting period, there is also outgoing transfer fees of $100, which is pretty steep. And that could eat up a solid chunk of the match you received should you choose to take those funds elsewhere. Compare that to Vanguard and Fidelity. What do they charge? $0.
Yeah.
So Robinhood, they're obviously doing everything they can to make it hard to leave. You said how they're offering sticky incentives. Everything is sticky over at Robinhood headquarters. They are certainly they're taking the carrot approach right on the front end, but there's also a stick on the back end to try to coerce you into staying put and not leaving.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the issue with me is the fee that's prohibitive and that vesting period that you mentioned, Matt. 5 years. That's a really
long
time. Yeah, and so that definitely, those are red flags for me from Robinhood. That's why I'm not, you thought I was going to be like, oh, it's great, everyone should do it. No, not quite. Let's talk about some of the other pros and cons, because no one else out there is offering any sort of match. This is kind of a singular product out there in the marketplace. Nobody else that I've seen has tried to compete with Robinhood on this front. And the perk you're getting, it more than outweighs, yes, the Robinhood Gold fee that you're paying, which is cool. But and there are other perks, by the way, for Gold members too, like higher rates on savings if you stash your savings with Robinhood. So that could also be another bonus, right, in the let's go with Robinhood category. But one other potential downside that we should mention is just that Robinhood is essentially set up to get folks to trade more frequently. The bells and whistles that we talked about, the flashiness of the app, it is all set up. It's so slick that it incentivizes behavior that could end up costing you far more than the match is worth over time, right?
And that's
they want you to trade.
Exactly.
That's exactly what they want you to do. Well, that's how they make money.
That's how they make their money. And that is why we were pretty sour on Robinhood in the early days, especially, is because it incentivized you to trade and to trade often.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is what, that's again, how they pay the bills, how they keep the lights on, is the payment for order flow and them getting you to trade more frequently. But that could come out to harm you so much more than the 1% or 3% match would benefit you, right? And so if you do opt to stick with Robinhood for your Roth IRA, that's fine. But set up automatic contributions and consider taking the app off your phone since you aren't tempted to start trading on the reg. I think if you've got the app on the home screen at your fingertips, you're likely going to be, oh, let me log in and see what's going on with the market today. And you
see your balance down and you think, oh, should I make change? It's less the fact that it's so easy to trade, and it's more the fact that it's so easy to see what your account balance is. Because I think that's what then causes folks to make changes to their account. It seems like it's less the accessibility and more just how present it is. If it's ever present like that in your mind, then it feels like it's something that you should be attending to.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that this is a win for Vanguard and Fidelity, even though it seems like a loss. The semi-archaic websites that they roll with and the apps that aren't really up to snuff is because I do set it and forget it. And I put a little bit of money in Robinhood because I wanted to test it out, and my attention was just drawn to the app because it is so sophisticated, it is so neat, that I found myself, I could go down this rabbit hole and it wouldn't be good for me in the long run. And so, hey, 1% sounds great until you start making moves with your money that end up costing you, you know, a lot more than that.
Exactly. And by the way, so I just looked it up. It is a flat $5 per month. So that is, you know, that is a slight argument, Kyle. So you're only, what, $60? You're only paying that every single year rather than the 72. But one of the keys to this value proposition is to actually max out that Roth IRA every single year. Because if you end up slacking off, right, like you said that you're planning to max out your IRA, but if you only put in like a couple thousand dollars or so, like you're not even going to be breaking even because of that fee. And by the way, he didn't mention this, but hopefully folks aren't attracted to the higher yield, the higher rate that they're paying on their savings account too, because I checked, it's not even as high as CIT.
Yeah.
So you can find even higher rates elsewhere, and we'll make sure to link to CIT in our show notes for this episode.
Betterment too. Those are two places where you don't have
exactly.
to. Yeah, they have better rates.
Yeah, and again, plus you've got those other issues that we talked about, like the vesting period, the exit fees. So it only makes sense for folks who don't mind those downsides, and you know that you're dead set on maxing out that Roth IRA each and every single year. You have to know yourself. And honestly, this is why I feel comfortable recommending it for folks who feel that they've got what it takes. Because if there's one thing that I feel like I've learned, certainly since we started the podcast, is that each individual person is different. And what that means is that not everybody does things the way I do them. And so what that means for some folks is when it comes to their investments, they might need to pay a financial advisor, because for them, that's what it's going to take in order for them to actually invest their money. They don't feel comfortable taking on the responsibility of that themselves. But if you know that you are someone who can truly set it and forget it, you can, like you said, I think removing the app completely from your phone, I think that's an incredible strategy. And if you have no other way of getting a match, I mean, for you and me, we've got our solo 401k through the company. Mm-hmm. And so we're technically able to provide a employer-sponsored match, but that's still money that...
It's just the two of us, yeah.
...that we pay. I don't have some large corporate entity that is chipping into my retirement for me. And so for me, this is attractive. And I mean, they only announced it last year, so I didn't jump on it at the end of last year. But I truly am considering it because I know myself, right? Like, I know I'm not going to be tempted to get in there and check my balances daily. I know that I'm not going to be tempted into speculative trading. I'm not going to jump on any meme stocks. But it makes me think of Klarna, right? Like mm-hmm. that was a benefit that you were able to receive. Are you playing with fire a little bit? Yeah. But if you know that there's no way I'm not going to immediately pay this off.
Yeah.
But if somebody else hears that and they're thinking, oh, man, I don't have to pay this thing off right. Maybe I'll just push. Yeah, let's just wait a little bit. I think the same thing can be true of Robinhood.
Yeah, I'm just glad we spelled out the downsides because there are potential downsides.
Absolutely.
And you have to know what they are. And you also have to know that you, like you said, you are playing with fire. You might get burned. But if you know, I got this. Like, this is a baby fire. And I'm a Cub Scout or Eagle Scout or something like that. I know what I'm doing around fire. Then great. Then do your Eagle Scout thing and get the match and optimize everything to the fullest. Just know that there are potential downsides that could cost you more than what the match offers.
Absolutely.
So hope that helps, Kyle. Best of luck to you, man. Keep up the good work. All right, Matt, we've got more questions to get to, including one about an authorized user status. It actually might not be working out very well anymore for one listener. We'll get to that and more right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
We are back. We've got plenty more money content to get to during this episode. And let's go ahead and hear from our next listener. This is a listener, by the way, who recently got married.
Hi, Matt and Joel. Thank you so much for such a great show and all the content that you put out. I love you guys. My name is Joe from Detroit, Michigan, and I have kind of an unusual question regarding a credit score. So I just recently got married 2 months ago, and I'm trying to help my husband raise his credit score that is currently 690. So he is 30 years old, and we just found out that his mom added him as an authorized user on her credit card when he was 15. So that has been a good thing as far as this is his oldest line of credit. So he has established credit for 15 years. She's always made on-time payments. So that's a good thing. However, she has a balance currently of $22,000, which is 70% credit utilization rate on that card. So we know that is not good. So our question is it better for him to remove himself as an authorized user on that credit card so he's not impacted by that high credit utilization rate? Or should he leave himself on that card because that's his oldest line of credit? And if we close that out, his oldest line of credit would then only be 5 years. He doesn't have much else on his credit report other than two credit cards of his own that he pays off in full monthly. I know it's kind of a nuanced question. You might not be able to answer it, but are happy to take any advice you guys have. And thank you so much.
Nuance? Oh, that's what we do best around here. Cool.
We love nuance, right?
No, I mean, we really do. Because
we lean into the shades of gray.
The details matter. The specifics. And to not come down with blanket statements like some folks do.
That's what I love about personal finance, Matt, too. Because there's like a few principles you could live by and you do really well. But then you dig in underneath those and there's just like, it's almost like pulling up a log and there's all those bugs running around. There's so much like nuance and detail that you can get into. And this is one of those cases, right? Where we talk about the authorized user status, but then it can also come back to bite you. And we haven't even congratulated Joe, by the way. Congrats on getting married.
Yeah.
2 months in, sounds like you're going to save your husband's bacon here, right? By asking this question and taking some action. So let's maybe start off by explaining the authorized user thing for a second. This
authorized user status.
Yeah, this is one of those things we've talked about as kind of a trick to help folks build credit, especially youngsters, right? You can oftentimes help your child build credit for their future by adding them as an authorized user to your account. And it allows them to piggyback on what is hopefully the good credit decisions of that parent or loved one. And so you don't actually give that person, you don't give your child the card associated with the account. They're just kind of existing and getting the benefit of the way it reflects to the credit bureaus, making it look like they're doing the good thing that you're doing, which is cool. And it helps their score to soar over time. And this works great for a lot of people who get added to an account where the primary account holder knows what they're doing, where they're handling their credit wisely. But of course, there's risk involved. Kind of like Robin Hood. It's like there's benefit here, but there's also risk.
Yeah, this is something the authorized user. I've done this with all four of my kids. I forget which credit card it was, but it was whichever credit card I went to, and they made it super easy. Mm-hmm. And literally, it took just a few minutes to literally add all four of my kids, and so they're gonna have crazy long, especially our youngest. Man, I think I did it like right after he was born. Yeah. So he's gonna have like a 20-year credit history before he even realizes he does. But like you said, the downsides. Joe's husband is experiencing the negative effects of the risk of being an authorized user right now.
It could be worse, but he's definitely experiencing something, right?
Yeah, it's not as bad as it could be. So it would have been certainly helpful in those early days, but it sounds like it's certainly having that negative impact now. A high credit utilization rate, that is totally going to harm your credit score, because that piece of the pie, they don't provide full transparency as to exactly how they calculate your score, but they do have that nice pie chart, and they let you know how much they weight some of those different factors.
There's definitely like a Wizard of Oz quality to the credit scoring,
because you don't exactly know how, by making some of these changes, how quickly it's going to improve and the degree to which it's going to improve, but they do let you know that generally speaking 30% of your scores is made up of the utilization rate. And so in, I guess, Joe's husband's mom's case, she's carrying a pretty high balance. It's gotten out of whack, and that is going to send not only her score, but Joe, your husband's score, down. And you know, this also has me worried that his mom might let other things get out of hand with this credit card. She could end up racking up even more debt. She could end up making late payments or miss payments altogether, which would then cause that score to plummet even more.
Yeah, it's probably time to cut bait and ditch the authorized user status on this one. And because his score is in the decent range, at least right now, right? He's got other credit at his disposal. This isn't the only thing that's impacting kind of his score with the bureaus. And so maybe he doesn't have an ideal amount, but he's at least got some.
He's at least got a couple
of cards.
He's not starting from total scratch.
Yes, which would make it a slightly different answer. But for that reason, I think remaining an authorized user on her account, it poses more risk than taking him off of her account does. And you mentioned the length of credit history factor. Yes, it's true that removing him as an authorized user is going to hurt his length of credit history. But, Matt, you just mentioned the pie chart. That factor makes up like 15% of the pie chart. So half as much as the impact of a negative credit utilization ratio, which you ideally want to be less than 10%, but definitely less than 30%, right? Yeah. And so
she said 70? Is that over? Which, by the way, didn't she say it was like a $20,000+ balance? If that's only 70%, man, this is, she's got some fat limits on that.
Yes, and she's
on that piece of plastic.
She's used them. She's racked them up.
Marking it.
Which is the exact opposite of how we tell people to handle. Right. Don't use credit cards if that's going to be the case. So it's, I would say it's worth sacrificing that, though, the 15% of the score and not having quite as long of a credit history in order to avoid further damage to the more important component of your credit score, the 30%, which is the credit utilization rate. And so the damage is potentially fixable by contacting the credit bureaus, especially if there were non-on-time payments and you say, hey, listen, I was just an authorized user. Don't hold this against me. Lots of times they'll remove that from your credit report. But because of their poor track record of customer service, I wouldn't count on it. So basically, better safe than sorry. Why not go ahead, get yourself removed, and kind of continue to build credit on your own?
Yeah, this is the credit bureaus. We're not talking about Disney customer service or relations or whatever,
yeah,
where they're just doing everything they can to make sure that you have
bending over backwards, yes,
a pleasant experience. But it is also important to mention that your husband is, and nor are you, neither of you are going to be legally responsible for any of this debt that his mom has racked up. That's a big question that comes up around authorized user status. Just because you're made an authorized user, that doesn't mean that you have any legal or financial responsibility for that debt that's accrued on that account.
See, I thought that was the whole point for you of signing your kids up as authorized users so that you could like stick them with all your debt someday.
Okay, yeah, surprise.
On you guys.
You're responsible for this balance.
You're 18 now. Pay off daddy's debt.
Which I use to buy all your stuff. And so certainly, again, this is going to impact your score, but you don't, you know, you're not taking on any of the actual liability. And when it comes to actually removing himself from that account, from that card, he should be able to do this without even having to involve her, without involving his mom, if that's going to be like a touchy subject to where it feels like she might be, if she feels a little judged or something like that. I guess this is assuming that he has access to the card, because he's an authorized user, but I guess she didn't clearly state whether or not he has the actual card. If you have the actual card,
call the number on the back.
Just call the card and you've got the number, you've got the information.
But even if you don't, if you know who the account is with and the account number, that should be enough to
hopefully
you removed too.
Exactly. But either way, I still think it's a conversation that you could have in a non-judgmental kind of way where it's just like, you know what?
Sure.
Because she said they just found out about this and they just got married. So there's a lot of life change that happens right when you get married. And it's just like, oh, yeah, we're going to open up some new accounts in my own name, some joint accounts. We just want to go ahead and, you know, cut the umbilical cord.
Ain't got to be all judgmental about it. That's for sure. Yeah. But I guess when you get married, that's the time to cut it all the way.
But then when you're talking about cutting the cord, then the umbilical cord, then you're dealing with other like potential touchy subjects.
Yes.
And, you know, mommy issues and stuff.
But either way, I think you can either talk to your mom about it if you feel comfortable, or you can go about it directly with the credit card company, whatever works best for you. But the last thing I want to mention, Matt, is that when it comes to building credit in the future, there's just no magic bullet, right? It takes doing the right thing consistently over time. And so while the authorized user thing, it can be kind of a silver bullet to help people get a leg up, help your husband, I'm sure it did for a while, get a leg up and build that credit history. The reality is playing the game that the credit bureaus have established, playing it well over time is what's going to be the biggest benefit to you, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say this, if he's incredibly keen on getting that score higher sooner rather than later, if you guys are looking to maybe buy a house or something like that, he could do something like pay for a service like Self, which is basically a service that allows you to lend yourself money, and they report that activity to the credit bureaus, which then also gives you an installment loan. Ooh. As opposed to just the credit cards, right?
Yeah. And so the type of credit that you're utilizing.
Yeah, the credit mix, which is important too.
That's another factor.
And the fees are reasonable for the service they provide, but also you can just be patient, right? And continue those solid credit habits, which will get him where he wants to be too. I think Self is a great option for a lot of people who have had their credit in the dumps. It can help you move up 20, 30, 40, 50 points over the course of a year with that loan. But the question is, do you even have to do that? That depends on kind of what your needs are for your credit score in the near future.
Like you said, like a mortgage. And some folks will even say too, it's like, oh, well, you don't have to put your husband's name on the mortgage when you're applying for it. And that's true. But that also means the lender's not going to look at his financial information, not just his credit score, but also his income. And most couples are often, especially these days, right? Like, you are wanting the lender to look at all of the income. Mm-hmm. And so that's, yeah, another thing to keep into account. They will be looking at his credit score. And it's not just the average of your two. Oftentimes the lenders, they're going to fixate on the lower score. They're not going to take the middle of his scores and the middle of your scores and average the two. They see that, what would you say, 690? Mm-hmm. They're going to see that and say, this is a 690 couple. So it is definitely worth working towards a higher credit score, especially if you're looking at buying a home in the near future. But Joe, yeah, we hope that gets you pointed in the right direction. Joel, let's hear from our next listener, and she's got a question about the new save plan. They want to make sure they're doing their student loans right.
Hey, Matt and Joel. Emily here from North Carolina. Longtime listener and avid money saver. I've been researching and listening about student loan repayment, and I've still got a few questions. Is there some sort of catch by switching to the save plan? My husband has $13,000 in student loans with an average interest rate of 3.9%. He's currently on the standard plan with a minimum monthly payment of $155. Through the repay option, it would drop to $149. But my understanding is that the $149 is subject to reevaluation every year because it's income driven. We anticipate both our salaries to continue to increase, so will that cause the payment to increase as well? The other variable is my husband is eligible for PSLF. He began making payments on his loans December 2018, so it's my understanding the remaining balance will be forgiven in about 5 years from now. In our situation, is it worth making the switch? The student loans are the only debt we have aside from our mortgage. Thanks for answering my questions and for all you do to help save for our financial futures.
Oh, man, no debt besides the mortgage?
All right.
That's pretty great, right? Mm-hmm. So congrats to you, Emily, on
We're
that.
We're hearing from a bunch of listeners who are doing all the right things.
Yeah.
Except for the mother-in-law. Not to throw her
the relatives of our listeners need some.
Everybody else seems to be. Even Joe's husband, he's still
not
paying
his
credit. Yeah, it's not his fault. He was taking the right steps with his money. So.
Yeah.
But Emily, you sounds like y'all are doing great too.
Yeah, she's clearly an avid money saver after our own hearts.
Yeah.
But okay, let's the 42-month payment pause. Let's talk about that for just a second, because that benefited a whole lot of people, right? Like, and we were talking for 3.5 years essentially about what you should do given this payment pause and the perpetual extensions of that payment pause. There was a lot of ground you can make up financially, even though I know inflation was hard to stomach. But if you ditched that $300, $400, $500, $600 a month payment out of your life, man, what can you do that's good for your financial future while this is going on? There was a lot that a lot of our listeners at least were able to take advantage of, whether it was paying off those student loans in full, some people did, or whether it was saving and investing and paying off debt. I mean, all of the above.
At the very least, taking that money, funneling those would-be payments into a high-yield savings.
Yeah.
And then you can choose whatever it is that you want to do now that the pause is unpaused.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, unpaused. I think the folks that benefited the most, though, was anybody on the track for public service loan forgiveness, right? Because all of those payments counted towards that 10-year forgiveness timeline. They made out like bandits.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, and by the way, Emily, like you're not the only one with question about student loans these days. I feel like with payments having just restarted, the new save plan being partially implemented, and the botched forgiveness attempt, all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
a lot of folks still feel out of the loop. They don't really know how to proceed. And so we'll do our best to help you think through your specific situation here, and hopefully it'll help other people too think about theirs.
That's right. Yes. But Emily, she first asked about like whether or not there is a catch to signing up for the save plan. And we're not really seeing a catch from where it is that we're sitting.
Just giving up your firstborn child. I saw that in the fine print somewhere.
It's always important to read the fine print. Was it Rumpelstiltskin?
That's him. Yeah.
Skilson style.
What a creepy dude in retrospect.
You know, a lot of those like German original fairy tales were adapted to, like, when Disney came along. Uh-huh. They like made it certainly more family
happy
friendly.
Endings and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But you know, the originals are certainly a bit more weird.
Yes.
But the save plan, it is incredibly generous. It makes sense for, honestly, for most folks. But of course, run the numbers before signing up. And in your case, it sounds like you did that. And it sounds like Save, that it's probably not all that advantageous. Of course, you're going to save $6 a month right now, get you a Robinhood Gold Plus
membership.
<account.
laughs> Yeah. That's about all it'll buy you.
Yeah. But because your payment is based on a certain percentage of your disposable income, if you do start bringing home a significantly larger paycheck, you could find that payment shooting up. Like, there are caps, but still, it's even worth thinking through what could our incomes go to. Punch that in the calculator and see what the maybe what the max payment might be.
How much that payment could jump, yeah.
Incomes were to go up, yeah. And even if those payments do see a slight decline for, let's say, a year, well, if they end up increasing for the following 4 years because you're getting paid more, because your adjusted gross income has increased, and that's what the IRS and the federal government is looking at, well, it's probably not going to be the best move for y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right, for them. But then for a lot of borrowers out there, the new plan is going to significantly lower their payments.
Yes.
Not like $6, but like 60 or
600,
300. And some people who don't make very much will see their payments go down to zero, right? But it's good that you've run the numbers, Emily, right? And one other benefit, by the way, of the Save plan that we should mention is the incredible interest subsidy that's been added. Previous repayment plans found a lot of folks making on-time payments and not really getting anywhere, treading water, or worse, seeing their balances go up, seeing the mountain get steeper. Right?
As that interest was capitalized and rolled into the original balance.
That was one of the biggest problems for so many people, saying, I've been paying regularly on time, and guess what? The balance goes up, which is scary. Under the Save plan, that can't happen. And so if you make your monthly payment, your balance can't grow. But while that benefit is a massive help for a lot of folks, it doesn't really benefit you guys, because even if that balance goes up over the next few years, the whole thing is going to be wiped out anyway because you're on that path to PSLF.
That's
so
right.
I would say even that awesome, amazing, incredible perk, it's got very little value for you.
That's right. But for everyone else out there, make note.
Yes.
Just keep that in mind. But yeah, since her husband, he's basically dedicating... Yeah, he is. Not basically. He like truly is dedicating an entire decade to public service, which is awesome, by the way. We want him to get the max forgiveness amount that he can. So, for instance, like another route that you could take would be to, let's say, aggressively pay more every single month, which would mean paying off those loans even faster, which isn't the worst thing in the world for a lot of folks. From a mental standpoint, it might feel really good to have that completely off your plate.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone who's about halfway down the road to full forgiveness, that's not what it is that you're aiming for. From a financial standpoint, you
like
want
different goals.
Yeah, yeah. You want to take full advantage of all the benefit that you're going to receive via PSLF. So basically continuing to ride it out another 5 years, that sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. For sure. All right. And from our perspective, it makes sense for you guys to stay put on the standard plan because of your specific details. Again, you're probably an outlier here, right? Most people are going to benefit from this new Save plan. You're not one of them. And so one last thing to mention, by the way, though, is that since your husband is just halfway there, if there's any chance that he's not going to stay in public service for the next 5 years, that would likely impact your decision differently, too. You said his balance is $13,000. That's a lot of money, but it's also not so much that it's impossible to go a different route and say, you know what, I'm pivoting into the private sector and I'm just going to pay this student loan off myself. And if that's the case, then, you know, if he goes in the next year or two to work for a private company where he could easily earn significantly more than the amount that would be forgiven, that most definitely changes the calculation too. So no kind of, you can't predict with 100% certainty he'll be in this job for the next 5 years. But if that's the goal, then it even, I think, further cements your decision to stay put on the current repayment plan.
Yeah. Like, essentially, we just don't want you to fall victim to sunk cost fallacy. And just because you've gone 5 years and you're like, oh man, we're like halfway there, woohoo. Don't let that dictate what you do for another 5 years. Like, 5 years is a long time. Like, let's say, okay, on one hand, you got one scenario and he loves his work, right? So I'm going to say it's not all about the numbers and how much you're going to get paid, because let's say he loves working in public health, or he loves working at a school or a nonprofit, like some different areas where PSLF, where his job might qualify for that. If he's finding job fulfillment and personal satisfaction by doing that, well, it's not always going to be about the money. You want to make sure that you're thinking through that as well.
But if you're tired of the job.
But on the other hand, exactly, what if you hate the work?
And someone says, well, double your income.
Well, don't stick around just for the PSLF
for
another 5 years, because that's just too long to wait.
For 13 grand.
In my opinion.
When you can get paid $50,000 more next year.
And I think there's even a price to pay for even, quote unquote, getting out early, even if you're like, oh, okay, well, essentially, let's calculate how much would be forgiven, okay, by taking this job that even pays a little bit less. How much, basically, what are we paying? Uh-huh. There's almost like a fee associated with moving towards potential work that you might find incredibly satisfying and fulfilling. And so it's just something to keep in mind that it's not always about the numbers. Like, there's the financial angle side of things, but there's also...
what do I want my life to look like?
Yeah. We just don't want you to fixate on just this small, tiny vignette of PSLF.
Yeah.
We want you to see the full grand picture of what your life could look like.
And I would say if there was $175,000 worth of student loan debt that was going to be forgiven, you might stick it out at a job you don't like.
Yeah, 5 years all of a sudden doesn't sound too bad.
Right. But 13 grand is like great, amazing to be forgiven. But
yes, you got some options.
You've got more options.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally agree.
All right, Matt, we've got another question to get to. Let's talk about in just a second, like whether or not you can still get a cheap, decent used car. Is it possible? We'll talk about that right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah, and here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com.
All right, man, we're back at it. It is now time. Oh, almost kind of felt like I was going to say ludicrous headline of the week, which is not the case. That was 2 days ago.
But we can talk about ludicrous car prices.
Ridiculous cost of transportation. This is our Facebook question of the week. This one is from Sonia. She asked in the group, can you still get a decent car for $5,000? What are some tips? And like we hinted at earlier, we have seen a ton of inflation in the car market over the past few years. So this is a great question. Because one of the main ways I've been able to invest quite a bit more money for my future is by curbing that. It's the second line item in most people's budgets, the cost of transportation.
It's the easiest one to change. The housing one is so difficult to change.
It's a little bit tougher, but what you drive, oh my gosh, you have full control over that. So this makes me think. So right after Kate and I got married, So right when we got married, we had two cars. Not surprisingly, we were in separate cities. But once we got married, we were in the same geographic location, and we said...
Downsize the fleet.
But we realized we didn't need to have two cars. And so we sold my Jeep, and we drove not only her 94 Honda Accord that she drove in college. Dude, she was driving this thing in high school, and I still miss that car. The thing was awesome.
I heard she was driving it in middle school against the law. That's what I heard.
On the farm. The private property. That's a lot. You can drive wherever you want.
Yeah. But no, you're right. I mean, like, that is a big thing to get rid of one car.
Yes.
Most people would say that's insane. A lot more people working from home these days who could get rid of a car.
It's worth considering. And we're lucky.
And save a bundle.
And we're lucky enough to have been able to maintain that, man. Like, it's been over 16 years now, I guess, that we have been a one car family. And that's 16 years. Of not paying insurance, of not paying taxes, maintenance.
Yep.
Just all the headache that goes along with keeping up with another vehicle, which just think about all that money that you can then invest, not only in the market for retirement, but just in other ways too, in ways that might allow you to crank up the dial in ways of spending that just mean more to you as an individual.
It's like an instinctive, impulsive thing now at this point to have two nice cars in the driveway. And that's really what you value, that's fine. But if you haven't thought long and hard about what you value, this is a place where you can significantly dial back and have more money to enjoy in other cooler areas. I completely agree. And this is one of those things, Matt, I've been saying this for a long time, and this made me question whether or not it's still true, that you can drive a decent car that's $5,000 or less. And because I remember my Nissan Altima that I had for like 6 or 7 years, it was $3,200. But then I'm like, with inflation now, used cars going up in price, can you still do this? And I think it's so much harder to do now than it was, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And but KBB, Kelley Blue Book, they put out a list earlier this year of the best used cars under $5,000. And they're all mid-2000 economy cars, basically, right? It's like the 07 Accord and Camry, those ones top the list.
Which is when we sold our second car back in 07.
Yeah. Well, those are great cars. Those are really worth looking at. The mid-2000s cars that have strong reliability ratings,
that
right?
That was a really long time ago, though. I mean, literally, like, so if you're looking, like, the average number of miles that, what is it, the federal highway, whatever people, like, they estimate that it's over 13,000 miles now that folks put on their car every single year. So if you're looking at a car that's that old, you're looking at well over 200,000 miles. And
it's, for a lot of them, but
starts
again,
getting kind of dicey when it comes to looking at purchasing a car that's got that many miles.
True, but the more you look around, the more you might be able to find a diamond in the rough, find a deal.
Yep.
So I think it's worth saying, I think, yes, you can. It's not easy, right? And so...
Totally agree.
One thing I would suggest, because I would always push people in this direction, but I think maybe expanding and increasing your price range just a little bit can help a lot, right? Increasing your budget by a few thousand bucks can help you find something a bit newer that's likely a bit more reliable, has a few less miles on it. I think it's possible to get a great car for $4,000 or $5,000. But it's not probable.
It's, yeah, I totally agree. I do think something in like the $7,000 to $9,000 range feels like a $5,000 car 10 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. But also, too, I just love the heart of Sonia's question, because basically she's trying to see how little it is that she can spend in order to get a decent ride, in order to get some reliable transportation, because most folks are doing the opposite, right? They're trying to figure out how much they can afford to spend, like, at the upper limit, and they're just hamstringing their budgets for years to come. They're often taking out longer loans than they should, just in order to get something that's a bit nicer. Driving a paid-off car comes with so many other perks where you're not paying interest on that ride, and it's just often worth opting for something a bit older in order to reap some of those some of those other rewards.
You and I, we've talked about how, like, it, even if extra millions landed in our bank account tomorrow, we probably wouldn't go out there and upgrade our vehicles immediately, although I still want a Rivian, right? Like, it's still something I'm lusting after, even though I'm not going to pull the trigger. And but, like, it makes me think,
I'm feeling the Tesla
you might hit it before me,
call of the sirens more. I started reading Elon Musk's biography
by
what's his name,
yeah,
he did
Walter
Steve
Isaacson.
Yeah, just hearing all that went into the making of this, not only this company but specific cars, I'm just like, oh,
well,
man.
The prices have dropped significantly. There's still the federal tax credit, but I digress.
I'm not going to do it, though.
The last car that... So we just recently added a second car to our fleet because my wife in grad school has to hit... We go in two directions more than we've ever had before.
You got different needs.
And so what car did I get, man? I got a used car, an Acura MDX. It's like an Acura SUV. 2005.
Also known as a fancy Honda.
Right. Yes, exactly. 2005 for $4,000. Has a crack in the windshield. It's certainly not perfect. It's not...
It's fairly pretty, though.
It's okay.
I thought
it's
you were
going
to say she's not pretty, but she's actually... It's Looks surprisingly good for an 05.
Yes.
I didn't realize it was that old.
05. 05.
How many miles does it have on it?
Has like 180,000 miles on it.
Oh, so under average.
Under 200, yeah.
All right.
So I guess this is just another...
There you go, Sonia. It's possible.
Yes. And could I have spent more? Sure, of course. But I take Sonia's approach. And the way I perceive it, the way I think about it is how little can I spend? Not how much can I spend and still have enough money left over? It's like, I just don't want to dedicate many of my financial resources at all to vehicles. As little as possible suits me best so I can buy other cool stuff.
Unless it's electric.
And save and invest a lot too, right?
And if it's electric, you might be willing to...
Well, that's the thing. At some point, I see myself going in that direction. When? And the prices keep going down.
But not yet.
Maybe sooner than later. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, let's give you a few other final tips as you are looking for an older car. Certainly look on Facebook Marketplace, look on Auto Trader specifically, but be prepared with a lot of questions about the history of the vehicle. We want to make sure that you are familiar with the maintenance, whether or not it was well taken care of.
Yeah. A good owner is going to have like documentation in the glove box for all the stuff. Here's the tire rotation. Here's the last time I got an oil change. Here's when the timing belt and water pump were replaced. All
exactly.
That kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And don't be afraid to, like, there are just some folks who aren't good at selling things. And so look for, I don't know, maybe sketchier listing or just like a terrible photo of a vehicle. But I don't know if it checks enough boxes, it's worth going to check it out because there are a lot of folks. I came across an article that was talking about homes that will sit on the market for months and months, sometimes even years, because they're empty. But you get somebody in there that can stage it and boom, it sells in like 1 week with multiple offers because all of a sudden people are able to visualize themselves in that apartment or that condo or that house. Same thing is true when it comes to a car. If it's a crummy looking photo or let's say the vehicle's dirty or something like that, there aren't a whole lot of folks that want to picture themselves in that vehicle. And so kind of think about it that way. Like a lot of folks are going to be drawn to the vehicle that was washed at the nice car wash. It's got nice photos taken with a cool background. But those are cars that probably aren't going to be listed for super affordable prices. But make sure, so we're talking about the maintenance of the vehicle. Make sure to get an inspection before you purchase that thing. Take it to a trusted mechanic so that you know what it is that you're getting into. Because even if some maintenance is needed soon, like it still might be worth it to opt for an older vehicle. We just want you to be prepared and for you to know that, okay, I'm willing to buy this vehicle. It's a little bit less, but I also know that, I don't know, with something
like the struts.
Yeah.
Or the engine mounts or something like that. Hey, look at this. This is looking a little worn. Maybe in 3 months' time, maybe in a year when you get this serviced, like this is going to need to be replaced.
Or even not replaced, even just knowing that like this will last 18 months at the very least.
Yeah.
And you know that at that point, you should have enough money on hand to then purchase another vehicle.
Right. Or that mechanic might say, hey, guess what? This car is a complete piece of crap. It's not even worth $4,000. Run away. And that is helpful advice too. And it's worth paying for that advice, paying for the expertise so that you don't end up with a lemon that's going to just be literally $4,000 down the drain or whatever. So we want you to avoid that. But I think it is possible, harder than ever before. Maybe expand your budget a little bit to open up even more options. But again, don't forget to get the inspection because I think that'll help. And hopefully How to Money listeners, Sonia included, are able to track down a cheaper car. Maybe you're even hopefully encouraged to think about ditching a newer ride that you got, moving to something a little bit older so that you can, bring even more money back in your life to do other cool stuff with it.
It's worth considering.
Yeah.
All right, man. Let's get back to the beer. You and I enjoyed an Icelandic Wee Heavy. This is a Scotch Ale by Einstok Olgerd. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this Scotch?
A malty, rich, had the caramel vibes going on too.
Oh, very, very caramelly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing. They're kind of like browns, but they're like sweet versions of browns. And I really like them. Not many people make Scotch ales. So whenever I get a chance to get my lips on one, I'm happy to. It was good.
Get your lips on this beer. it tasted like a quality whole wheat piece of bread that was toasted to perfection. You know, you're kind of feeling it.
My wife's been back on the homemade bread train and it has been nice.
Well, it's the best time of year for it, man.
Yes.
Kate, that's so funny.
And Kate, just the scent in the kitchen.
Dude, yeah. She made some homemade granola
nice.
Yesterday and I came home and I smelled. I shoveled so much of it into my face. totally lost. She's like, what are you doing? We're about to eat dinner. I'm like, it smells so good.
Cannot help myself.
But this totally kind of vibes that this beer is putting out there. First and foremost, though, malty, like you said. So if you know that you don't like IPAs, certainly look to brown ales, look to porters and stouts. Don't overlook Scotch ales because they are certainly going to be a beer that you can add to the rotation.
Might have a hard time tracking one down because not many people make them.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But if you can find one, they are that good blend of like malty, sweet. Like some of the malty ones can be really bitter, too roasty. Mm-hmm. This is kind of sweeter in the malty direction too. So
it's got nice balance.
Yeah, the Icelanders, they know what they're doing with craft beer apparently. Not bad, not bad. So Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. You, everybody out there listening, you can find show notes, links to some of the things that we mentioned up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. But buddy, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.